You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
You are listening to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features conversations with and the music of local musicians and traveling musicians performing in town. I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back John Morse Russell, music director and conductor of the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra, to talk about the upcoming concert, Ellis Island, The Dream of America, on Sunday, February 22nd at 4 p.m. and Monday, February 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, 540 William Hilton Parkway on Hilton Head. Welcome back to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, JMR.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's great to be here.
So, this has been a wonderful opening to the season. We're about halfway through the season now, but we had some wonderful concerts. We had Christine Lamprea, who I talked to on this show about the Dvorak Cello Concerto, although I refer to her now as Lamprea Numero Dos, because I talked to her sister before.
Oh, no, wait. What was your sister play?
Her sister, Stephanie, is a soprano.
Oh,
very accomplished. And in fact, I have a show coming up with her in a couple of weeks on contemporary classics. But I talked to her first, maybe 3 years ago now with her first release. So that was a wonderful concert with Dvorak. And then you had Marcus Roberts with his trio performing his transcription of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. Then the normal holiday concert that you have. And then this year so far.
Hold it. Whoa. Dave, stop there. Normal holiday concerts?
I'm sorry.
We don't do normal holiday concerts in Hilton Head, baby.
The next edition of the Extraordinary Holiday Concerts.
There you go.
And then followed that with a couple concerts so far this year. And that was Rachmaninoff in January, Rachmaninoff Symphony No. 2. And then just this past week, you had a guest conductor who did a Mozart-Beethoven program, but also began with Louise Farenc's Overture No. 2.
Right. What a delightful piece, eh?
Yeah. And last September, I did an homage to Louise Farenc because that was the sesquicentennial of her passing.
Oh, wow, eh?
Yeah.
And of course, Samuel Lee, who was our guest conductor, he was the winner of Malco competition, which is like a real big deal for a conducting competition. I think everyone in the orchestra really enjoyed working with him. And, like so many of our guest artists that we get with the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra, they're at the beginning of tremendous careers. And of course, we do this with the Hilton Head International Piano Competition, as well as many of the solos that we have with the orchestra. You know, you get to hear them, you know, in the intimacy of the First Presbyterian Church with our orchestra up close and personal before they go to the big time. Anyway, I can't express how beautiful it feels, you know, when I see, you know, solos who we've worked with over the years, you know, making their debut with the Berlin Philharmonic or, you know, New York or Cincinnati, Los Angeles, you know, Chicago. It's so very special. It's what makes the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra unique, is that we get to present these young artists at the beginning of tremendous careers.
Well, I have to double down on that comment with the fact that the finale of the Hilton Head piano competition is always done by the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra there at the Presbyterian Church.
Exactly. And we have the HHIP is going to be taking place just a little later on in spring, in March. And once again, this will be the young person's competition. So this is up to the age of 18. And I tell you what, every year it just gets more and more dazzling, right? These folks are just so extraordinary. So that's going to be on the 21st of March.
Yeah, And of course, that is the end of the competition where you could go to see the early rounds as well.
Oh yeah, of course. The orchestra is only involved with that finalist concert on the 21st, and we'll have five finalists, and each one will perform a movement of a major piano concerto. And so it's actually kind of nifty because you get to hear five different movements by five different kids. Sometimes it can be very interesting and unusual when a couple of the contestants will perform the same movement. And one thinks, oh, okay, well, rinse and repeat. No, it is extraordinary how different the exact same piece of music can be interpreted by these young players. And these players have like real like musical opinions. I mean, it's really something else to see how well developed and mature musically these folks are. I mean, a lot of people talk about young players today being, technical monsters, but do they have heart? And every year, man, all of these kids are so soulful. I mean, they've really done their homework and they really have something to say, which is a beautiful thing to see on display with our orchestra.
Well, and as you mentioned, this is the year for the young performers. That alternates then with the more mature performers in alternate years.
Yeah, absolutely. And so last year, of course, we had our traditional competition for adults. And in fact, the winner of that, Jonathan Momorah, is going to be performing on our final concert of the season this year, performing the Brahms Piano Concerto Number 2, along with the Schumann Symphony Number 4. Oh man, that is like a 1-2 punch of German romanticism right there. Love it.
Well, and he's also going to be performing at the Savannah Music Festival this year.
Oh, really? Oh,
Yeah.
wow. Spectacular, right?
And he was also a competitor at the Van Cliburn competition. Yeah.
And made it right to the finals. I mean, again, it's another one of these things that it's extraordinary. Our little music festival there on Hilton Head, and our performers will make it right to the finals of these, of the Tchaikovsky in Russia, the Van Cliburn here, all the majors. They're players, right? They're up there with all the big boys and girls. So it's really heartening to kind of see them blossom in that regard.
Well, but we're here today to talk about your provocative choice to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, the semi-quincentennial of the
Ooh, boy,
Declaration of
say that five
Independence.
times fast. Go.
Yeah, semi-quincentennial, 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 semi-quincentennial.
This is going to be the new parlor game of the next year,
Exactly.
right?
Which is because you are celebrating America by celebrating immigration. It's a provocative topic now, considering what the United States is doing in this area.
You know what? But the thing is, it's not provocative. I mean, we are all immigrants, right? And really, even the number of generations that have come here, right? I mean, we're all immigrants. It's an immigrant nation, and I know that many people enjoyed the American Revolution, right there on PBS with the great filmmaker Ken Burns on PBS. And man, even when the Declaration of Independence was being written, I mean, we were a nation of immigrants. There were people from all over, all walks of life, who were part of this great American experiment. And that story has continued for, the next 250 years and into the future. It defines who we are. And so we wanted to really explore that and celebrate that in a real palpable way. And this piece by Peter Boyer, Ellis Island, tells that story, and it is so emotionally moving. Gee whiz, Ellis Island itself, I mean, it's been out there for maybe about 20 years. An extraordinary piece of music, and it has been played literally by every orchestra in the United States over the last 20 years. Peter Boyer, very, very good friend and a spectacular composer. It's been, the capstone of his ever-growing career. But this will actually be the second time our orchestra has performed it. It was performed by Mary Greene and the orchestra thinking maybe about 15, 16 years ago, or maybe a little bit more. But this year, we're going to be working with Blake White and the Lean Theater Company here on Hilton Head. And some people may not know of this work, but it is multimedia. It is an orchestral suite with seven characters who are all reading from first-person accounts of their journey to America through Ellis Island. And then on top of that, there's a large screen above the orchestra that shows images, mostly photographic images, of what was going on at Ellis Island through all of those years. And these first-person accounts are so deeply moving. The whole piece was commissioned originally by the Hartford Symphony Orchestra in Hartford, Connecticut. And it's become a national phenomenon.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back John Morse Russell, music director and conductor of the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra. Yeah, I know Peter, and it's interesting talking to him about this work because it established him as the new American music composer. And so he's had a lot of commissions since then oriented toward American themes. Of course, he's written symphony, a lot of chamber music.
Yeah, he wrote a fanfare, actually a COVID fanfare. The Cincinnati Pops Orchestra had commissioned many composers to write COVID fanfares for a solo instrument. So Peter took that melody from the Cincinnati Pops COVID fanfare and wove it into a full fanfare for band called the Fanfare for Tomorrow that was premiered by the U.S. Marine Band at the Biden inauguration and broadcast around the world. And when you listen to his music, there is certainly a dollop of Aaron Copland in there. There's a large dollop of John Williams. But I think what makes his music so compelling is there are these flavors of other composers, of other great American composers. But in its essence, you can hear it, and it sounds like Boyer, right? He's got his own voice within that. And especially in this work, that is so deeply emotional that he's able to tap in to those feelings within his orchestration and his composition that makes it such a compelling piece.
And use of actors to do the narration is absolutely fabulous.
Right. And Blake White, who is a brilliant dramaturge and director, and the amazing things that he's been doing with Lean have been nothing short of extraordinary, with new works and compelling works, telling some really important stories in Hilton Head and, you know, attracting audiences from throughout the Lowcountry to come see his brilliant company and his brilliant work. So having him involved with this as the director and his actors from Lean has been really spectacular. And I just love working with him because he's so deeply committed to what he's doing and to telling the story through this piece. I know I don't want to give away too much, but we're going for a very provocative approach in how these stories are being told. I'll give you a little hint here. We've got seven stories. Normally, you have, and each of the actors will walk on stage and oftentimes in the traditional costume of their homeland, you know, whether it be Romania or Greece or Germany or Ireland. There's a great section of the Irish immigrant. But they'll all come in traditional costumes, right? So they look like they're from the 19th century, early 20th century. But instead, we're having our actors in street clothes, you know, like anyone else at the concert, embedded within the audience. And so instead of we are all in the audience sitting, watching this production before us, it tells a story that we are all immigrants, no matter where we came from. And no matter how high born or how low born, we're all in this together. And to have that narrative on top, I think tells a really, really important story of what we're trying to celebrate here in 250 years of our great American experiment.
And so this is the piece that caps the wonderful concert that's coming up. But you have programmed such an excellent introduction to that, because you begin with Charles Ives, orchestrated by William Schumann. Charles Ives, of course, is one of my favorite composers, William Schumann as well, both American composers, with Charles Ives' Variations on America.
Right. And this is one of the pieces that really turned me on about orchestral music. You know, I'm probably 10 years old when I'm listening to this piece, because and the whole concept of a theme and variation, obviously, America, everyone knows the tune, but the way he takes each of these variations to tell a real engaging story. There's one of the variations that sounds like ragtime. There's another one that sounds like a Cuban rumba. There's another one which is ridiculously dissonant and crunchy. There's one that's kind of flippant and fun. People are all, you know, out on the ballpark playing a game of baseball together. Each variation, one next to the other, I think speaks to the rich, diverse tapestry of the American experience. But he wrote this in the late 1800s. But in a time when talking about things like diversity and inclusion didn't exist. But he saw that that was what brought the beauty to America. And I think that this piece encapsulates that.
Thank you.
It is so great to start this very provocative concert because the fact that it speaks to diversity and inclusion,
Right.
and which are, again, are things which are being attacked today in America.
Exactly. I've had these types of conversations with so many artists and colleagues over the last couple of years, with all the challenges that we're having in this country, all the challenges that we have in the world. What do you do to motivate yourself when you wake up every morning? I mean, the fact is that I'm a conductor. I create sonic experiences. How can we take the skills and what we're offering to make a difference when so much stuff is going off the rails? And the conversation always comes back to, with all my friends and colleagues, well, you got to do what you got to do, but you have to do it with a sense of purpose. And I think this is our role as artists in challenging times, is number one, remind us of our humanity, especially when violence has become normalized, when truth telling has been marginalized, when so much other stuff and ugliness is out there. We are the ones who have to say, wait, this is what we're, really fighting for. It's for beauty and our shared humanity. So we have to be the ones who remind everyone about what living in peace and harmony is all about. And number two, I think a lot of what kind of motivates me these days is to be able to tell truths through music. And it's not like I'm proselytizing and up there, talking about this or that. No, I'm going to let Peter Boyer tell those stories through his music, or Igor Stravinsky, or Piazzolla, or Charles Ives, or Dvorak, or, any number of composers whose musical truths echo from one generation to the next and will always have that intrinsic truth to what they stand for.
This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the American Traditions Collection of Concerts, including the American Traditions Competition Week, featuring 24 of the top singers from around the country from February 16th to the 20th in quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals competitive rounds at Victory North, 2603 Whitaker Street, Savannah. More information and tickets are available at www.atcsavannah.org. The Savannah Wind Symphony presents its spring concert, Courtly Airs on the Horizon, on Sunday, March 1st at 3 p.m. at the Fine Arts Auditorium of Georgia Southern University's Armstrong campus. This concert traces a line from the elegance and structure of Renaissance court music to the bold, expressive voices of today's composers. More information and tickets can be found at savannahwindsymphony.com. The Savannah Philharmonic's Music of Empire Elgar's Enigma concert with the guest conductor Benjamin Manis is on Saturday, March 28th at 7:30 p.m. in the Lucas Theater for the Arts and features, in addition to Elgar's Enigma variations, the violist Philip Dukes performing Von Williams' Flos Campi with the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus. More information and tickets are available at savannahphilharmonic.org. This music is often called classical music, But remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time. So I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for 4 centuries of great music with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back John Morse Russell, music director and conductor of the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra, to talk about the upcoming concert, Ellis Island, The Dream of America, on Sunday, February 22nd at 4 p.m. and Monday, February 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, 540 William Hilton Parkway on Hilton Head. Okay, so opening with the Charles Ives Variations on America and closing with Peter Boyer's Ellis Island, that in itself would have been the mark of a fabulous concert. But this is not a JML concert. This concert includes 4 pieces in the middle of the concert are written by emigres to the United States.
There's Stravinsky's Scherzo alla Russe.
Thank you.
Stravinsky lived in the United States for many, many years.
In Los Angeles.
Right. And he actually wrote that piece while living in Los Angeles. Many of the musical materials he developed when he was in Paris and in Europe. But he finally put them together in Los Angeles when he was kind of thinking of home. And Miklos Roza and Eric Korngold, these two composers who were from Europe, Korngold from Austria, Miklos Roza from Hungary, and they both came to the United States prior to the Second World War and settled also in Los Angeles. Miklos Roza would perform his Parade of the Charioteers from Ben-Hur. And of course, Miklos Roza, who was a you know, symphonic composer,
right?
But when he moved to the United States in the late 30s or early 40s, he was swooped up by the Hollywood establishment and became like the A-list Hollywood composer. And you listen to those scores of his films, and you know, King of Kings, Ben-Hur, they are spectacular, big orchestrations, and just so evocative and emotional, and they really kind of define those films. And the same thing happened to Eric Korngold, who a Jewish composer from Austria, and he got out of there and again settled in Los Angeles. where he became, you know, what again, an A-list film composer. And with all of the extraordinary quality and artistry of a Richard Strauss. And in fact, he out-Straussed Richard Strauss. And so we're going to be performing Korngold's King's Row Suite, which is melodies from his film King's Row, which is a gorgeous tone poem. And actually, here's a little connection, because you listen to the opening motive of King's Row. Have you noticed this, Dave? Because you listen to the opening motive, and all of a sudden, you're reminded that, oh, John Williams must have listened to Eric Korngold, because it's Star Wars! Miklos Rose and Eric Korngold, of course, are in Hollywood household names, but literally there are dozens and dozens of European composers who fled World War II and Nazism in Europe for the United States, and they settled in Los Angeles and became part of the film industry. But those are just the composers, man. Choreographers, set designers, film directors, actors, actresses, designers of all kinds. The Hollywood establishment that we know was built from those immigrants who came to find freedom here in the United States and took the artistry of hundreds of years of design, music, opera, and applied them to storytelling on film and completely transformed the American film industry and really defined it. And to see that here's Eric Korngold, who writes this score to the King's Row Suite, and then it's John Williams who listens to that Korngold sound, and it defines his sound for three more generations moving forward.
Well, also the fact that Eric Korngold, who actually he started working on films in Europe before coming to the United States, but when he came to the United States in the 1930s, he brought an idea from opera to film, which, right, again, John Williams uses, and that's the idea of the leitmotif.
Exactly, right? And you think of what makes Star Wars so amazing is those ideas of the leitmotifs. Max Steiner, he was another one of those immigrant composers. Max Steiner, probably best known for Gone with the Wind. Korngold and Steiner were very, very competitive, and they'd always be inviting them out to lunch. And, you know, it was like, you know, Steiner had just gotten the award for Gone with the Wind. And so Max Steiner invited Eric Korngold out to lunch. And they're talking the talk. And at some point in time, Steiner, you know, broke the news that he just won this Oscar. And then, you know, followed it with, Eric, how is it possible that my music just keeps on getting better and better and yours keeps on getting worse and worse? At which point, Eric Korngold, you know, took a big drag of his cigarette and he said, well, that's very easy, Maxie. It's because you keep stealing from me and I keep stealing from you.
And Korngold did have payback because he got Best Original Score for Adventures of Robin Hood and Best Original Musical for The Seahawk,
Right.
as
And
well
they,
as.
and those scores are just so brilliant. You know, I mean, there are a lot of film scores, especially these days. You can kind of just like read through them. You know, I mean, we do it all the time, actually. And, you know, it's what they do on the sound stages. But man, you get a Korngold score, you got to work. I mean, they are really, really difficult, virtuosic for every instrument in the orchestra.
And as you pointed out, Miklos Rotze, as well as Eric Wolfgang Korngold, are both concert music composers who, to make a living, did film music.
Right. And also on the first part of the program, we also have a work by Astor Piazzolla, who also lived in the United States for many years. Astor Piazzolla, who was born in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, of Italian parents. So he was he's an immigrant to the New World, or his parents were immigrants to the New World. And so he kind of grew up in this tradition of Argentinian music and tango, but with a European sensibility, because his parents were both Italian and both steeped in Italian music traditions. And then he came and immigrated to New York City for many, many years and kind of worked in the musical scene in New York, where he was rubbing elbows with rock musicians and jazz musicians and kind of developed this whole idea of what he called the Nuevo Tango, the new tango, which kind of took tango music to a whole new level of sophistication. I would say probably very similarly to how Scott Joplin kind of took the idea of ragtime, which was kind of, well, like tango, which was a music that was played in bars and brothels. And it was Scott Joplin who took this kind of the ragtimey form and just all of a sudden, you know, added a whole nother level of sophistication to it, making it into really concert quality music. Not unlike Frédéric Chopin, who took the common dance forms of the time, the waltz, the polonaise, et cetera, and took those kind of dance forms and made this exquisite virtuosic piano music from those kind of common musical forms. And so in that same tradition, Piazzolla, his father had passed away, and he wrote this one of his most moving pieces called Adios Nonino, Goodbye Father. It was written in New York City.
Thank you.
And so here we have these composers, Stravinsky, Piazzolla, Miklos Rosa, Eric Korngold, who have taken the ethos of places far away and have made it American. And at the end of the day, this really, to me, defines what this place that we call this concept, this idea, this place, what makes it so special is that everyone kind of brings their ideas here and they transform into something different and spectacular, specifically because they're rubbing elbows with all these other cultures that are around us as well. And in fact, I always talk about the idea of America not being a melting pot, but being a mosaic. There's always this concept of melting pot, right? Oh, let's take all the crayons and put them into the same pot and they're all going to melt and they'll all be one big crayon. But of course, you know, you do that in the melting pot and everything turns into this big gray slurry. I much prefer the idea of America as a mosaic because everyone comes here from a different place as one individual piece, like a mosaic, right? It's got its own color, it's got its own texture, it's got its own shape. And it comes here to this place that we call home, and it combines with all these other people and their unique shape, their own unique color, their unique something, right? And it goes right next to that. And you start to add up all of these little pieces of mosaic, each one individual and unique in and of themselves, and you put them all together, and it creates this dazzling picture of what this country is all about, that has three dimensions, that has richness, that has a unique quality to it that is so much greater than just the mere summation of the parts. And every piece on this program tells that story, both musically and emotionally.
Yeah, and the fact that, again, as you so wonderfully pointed out, we're not a gray slurry of all these textures and colors coming together. Or I'd like to think of it in terms of food and all these different flavors that all these different folks bring to this country and all the richness of the heritages and the fact that you can walk through a major city and see all these heritages that some people want to wipe off the map. Some people want to make it into a gray slurry.
There's this thing in Cincinnati. Have you heard of Cincinnati chili?
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's the chili that's not a chili. It is just this
right.
Weird melange. But once again, it's like this, it's like quintessentially an American experience. Because this guy comes here, Karajev, from Macedonia. And he starts up this little restaurant in Cincinnati, a little cafe. And he starts serving up this traditional Macedonian dish, which is like boiled meat with all these like Eastern European spices, cloves and cinnamon and cardamom and lots of red pepper. And it's just this unusual spice mix. Delicious. And then he would take this traditional Macedonian dish and serve it on top of, well, in Macedonia, it would be egg noodles, but he couldn't find any egg noodles here, but there's plenty of spaghetti. So he put this glob of kind of meat sauce on top of spaghetti, not unlike, you know, a marinara. And then traditionally, they'd probably sprinkle feta on top. But you know, one of his customers said, well, you can't find feta. Why didn't you put some cheddar cheese on top of it? So he puts cheddar cheese on top of it. And then another one of his people said, you call this chili? It's got to have beans. And so they put beans on top of it. And all of a sudden, this thing comes and creates this cornerstone of Cincinnati's regional cuisine that could have only happened here because you brought this Macedonian recipe and then it got flavored by all of these other things going on in Cincinnati at the same time.
Again, a dish that has the flavors from so many different immigrants.
Exactly. And you could probably name a whole bunch of foods that are like that.
So tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've had back John Morris Russell, music director and conductor of the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra, to talk about this spectacular spectacular new upcoming program, Ellis Island, The Dream of America, just coming up in a week or so on Sunday, February 22nd at 4 p.m. and Monday, February 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, 540 William Hilton Parkway on Hilton Head. And JMR, I want to thank you so much for programming like this and also for coming back on the show.
Thank you so much, Dave. And we need to also remind all of our listeners that our Sunday concert is traditionally at 4 o'clock. Our Monday night concert is traditionally at 7:30. But an hour before the concert is our pre-concert chat. And this one will be a real doozy because we'll have Blake White from Lean Theater Company is going to be there talking about the program as well. And it's always a wonderful, lively conversation with Blake. I love him to death. We're very, very good friends and kind of kindred spirits of sorts. And so on the Sunday performance at 3 o'clock, we'll have a chat from 3 to 3:30. Get there early, listen to the chat, and get yourself ready for the program. And then on Monday, it's a 6:30 chat that goes from 6:30 to 7. And then, of course, the concert's at 7:30. And especially if you haven't been to one of our concerts before, I so recommend coming to these pre-concert chats. We do them before all of our concerts, but it's a real great way to become immersed in the program and to get so much more out of the experience.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.